Hari Om. In this video, I'm going to share a bit about 12-step programs and some of the similarities of the 12 steps to yoga. As 12-step programs are so commonly used for treating addictive and dysfunctional behaviors, it's likely for teachers working with people in this field to come across them. My intention here is to give people a greater understanding of what the 12 steps actually are, how they can work in one's life, and how yoga can really complement the program. A 12-step program is a set of guiding principles outlining a course of action for tackling problems. The first 12-step program began with Alcoholics Anonymous, also known as AA, in the 1930s. It has since grown to be the most widely used approach in dealing not only with recovery from alcoholism, but also from drug abuse and various other addictive and dysfunctional behaviours. There are over 200 self-help organisations that employ 12-step principles for recovery. These organisations, often known as fellowships, have a worldwide membership of millions. As a side note, here are some interesting statistics. The book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the major textbook used in these 12-step fellowships, is the number two all-time best-selling book in the world, running second only to the Bible. Another fun fact, the 12-step programs are also the largest users of hotel facilities in the United States. Coming back, the principles in the 12 steps are very similar to the principles and philosophies of yoga. As we trace back through history, we can see why. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith, the founders of the 12 steps, drew many teachings and concepts from a fellowship named the Oxford Group. The Oxford Group studied with the Theosophical Society, who developed and systematized their teachings from many of the sages and rishis of India. With this in mind, we can see that the 12 steps are deeply rooted in yoga. I'll now go over what the steps actually are, one by one. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. The first word of the 12 steps is we. One of the major characteristics of addiction is separation, isolation. 12-step fellowships meet together and provide a safe, welcoming environment where the addict can find support on their path to sobriety. The sangha is the important aspect here. In the same way, yoga studios and classes also provide a safe haven from hectic everyday life. It's this sangha, this community, this sense of union that brings it all together. To break down this step into two parts, the first is admitting powerlessness, self-diagnosis, such a critical part. Generally, people in addictions would have had many people tell them to stop their problem, that they should just quit, etc. For someone to stop, they need to want to, but they first need to see that there's an issue. More than likely, people with addictions would have tried numerous things before finding 12-step programs. Willpower doesn't work. No matter how much they tried, they were powerless. Seeing that the addiction has power over oneself provides power in itself. This step brings awareness. The second part of the step is that our lives had become unmanageable. Seeing that one's life is unmanageable doesn't mean one needs to lose their job, their house, their family. It doesn't mean one needs to go to jail, be in trouble with the police, or lose their friends, family, respect. It means that one can't manage life on life's terms. Step one is critical because if someone doesn't recognize that they're powerless, that their life is unmanageable, they're not going to take the steps to change it. The next step, step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Lack of power, that's the dilemma. In step one, the person saw that they had no mere habit, that it was a beginning of a fatal progression, that one needs a way out. The substance or behavior has power over them and they need to find another power. Now, the steps are formatted in a specific order for a reason. One wouldn't go searching for a power greater than themselves if they believe that they were the power. Many will say that this higher power can be anything. It could be the AA group itself. It could be a tree. Anything that you respect. It might be a guru, a deity, a religious entity, whatever it is, it needs to be something that can help you with your problem. In yoga, we could relate this step and some more that follow to the Niyama Ishvara Pranayama, knowing that there is something greater than what we see ourselves to be and trusting in the existence of that power to guide us through any given circumstance. And that power can be something that you view outside of yourself or something that exists within you. But knowing the truth of that power is essential. Some people like to refer it as the ego self and the higher consciousness or the higher self. Whatever it is, it's to restore one to sanity, and sanity being defined as soundness of mind. So once someone has a conception, however that is, it might just be the willingness to rely or believe, upon a power greater than oneself, they can move on to the next step. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Many people see the word God mentioned and run. The word God here is to represent the understanding of a power greater than oneself. People could use the word God as an acronym to stand for good orderly direction, but whatever it is your own conception. In the correspondence between Bill Wilson, one of the founders of AA, and Carl Jung, Jung states, the alcoholic's thirst for alcohol is equivalent on a lower level of the spiritual thirst of our being for wholeness, expressed in medieval language, the union with God. Instead of yearning for the spirit of liquor, searching for the spirit in God. An analogy here, every modern house has electricity carrying power and light to its interior. And many of us don't understand how that energy works. It just meets our daily needs. We accept it. We don't question it. We rely on it, even depend on it. It just works. Now, the moment our mental or emotional independence is in question, often we behave differently. One can think that their intellect, their willpower can guarantee success in the world. One can try and control and manipulate the world around them. But when it doesn't go to plan, what happens? Time and time again, the person ends up drunk or acting out in their addiction or behavior. They see that they are utterly powerless over their addiction or behavior and that willpower doesn't work. They need to employ a new power, and that power in the 12-step fellowship is called God, regardless of what it actually is. Now, this step requires the willingness to turn one's will and life over to the care of that power. This willingness is the only thing that the step really requires, the willingness to do so. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. The liquor, drugs, obsessive, compulsive behavior was but a symptom. We had to try and get down to the cause of the condition. Therefore, we started upon a journey of personal inventory. It can be said that a shopkeeper takes an inventory to see what works, what doesn't work. So why wouldn't a person? Drinking or acting out to escape the guilt, to drown out the feelings, to numb. Often addicts think the conditions drive them to drink. They try to correct the conditions, stage manage life, and then find they can't. And this step is the process of seeing what the problem actually is and the person's part in it. This step can relate to the Niyama Swadhyaya, self-study. Swadhyaya helps us to discern between the ego and the higher consciousness. This step draws upon the elements of self-study, becoming aware of one's behavior and how it affects your state of being. Now, with this step, it can simply be written out. It can be listing all your defects of character, seeing first, okay, what is in my mind? Who am I resentful at? It can be pages and pages, books and books long, but it's taking this inventory of what is in here. What is the things that cause me to drink? I've heard it being said that it could simply be, I'm resentful about having to pay taxes. So listing that down, listing all the resentments, then listing all the fears, and then working out what your part in it is. So to do this, many people use what's known as a sponsor. So a sponsor in a 12-step program is someone who is working the recovery that the person is desiring. So you might see as someone who looks relatively sane, happy, living a useful and meaningful life. Someone like that in the 12-step fellowship who can act like a mentor to help you. So throughout the steps, generally a sponsor, this mentor, guides you through, which helps keep you on track and gives you the direction and the guidelines of how to best get this going and nut things out. The sponsor doesn't tell someone what to do. They share from their own experience. And I think this is a really big key, because if you're anything like me, when you're told what to do, there's a defiant nature, wanting to rebel. You don't tell me what to do. So by someone saying, okay, this is what I did, this was my problem, and this is how I tackled it, and the addict can become a lot more clear on, wow, okay, this is what's at stake. I can do this, what this person's done, or I cannot. If I do what this person's done, perhaps I have a chance of receiving the benefits that they too have received. So with step four, it is making that moral inventory, looking at like assets, liabilities, seeing how and what is causing us to act out in our addiction. The next step, step five, admitting to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. The biggest thing is getting rid of isolation. This step really brings us to connect with another person. It gives us that acceptance. There's this idea that one can be as sick as their secrets. And in this way, you don't have to carry the load alone. The anxiety, the remorse, the depression. There's so much relief in sharing defects and personality flaws with another. In receiving that understanding, that acceptance offers great freedom. It's a real humbling experience. Now, to find a person to confide in, it may be the sponsor, it could be a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a spiritual advisor, someone that you can fully trust in, is the only way that this step will work, because you don't want to have anything to hide. Hiding these things in a way is the thing that can cause you to continue your addiction or your dysfunctional behavior. By seeing, firstly, where your part is in all of these things that you've written down in your inventory, one can find out and see where the issue actually lies. Such an amazing and transformational step. The next step, step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So with our step five, one would then have a list of defects, and this handing over to the higher power, to the God, asking to remove the defects. It's a lifetime job. Examples of defects could be self-righteous anger, gossip, criticizing others, greed, wanting to be superior. These are the things that cause harm. They may momentarily feel good, but in the long run, they send us back into morbid reflection, inevitably picking up the substance or behavior again. So this is the reason why we want to be rid of these character defects. The next step, step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So I will just clarify here, the word him is to refer to God or higher power, whatever the person has defined as the power greater than themselves. Now with this step, humility, humbly ask that power to remove our shortcomings. This word humility can often be misunderstood. It doesn't mean that one needs to be a doormat. It's basically saying that I can't do this, I need help. Now, often one would think that if they have a defect, they want it gone, and that's a good thing. But in a way, it's basically saying, I know I don't want this defect, I want it gone. I'm running the show again. It's very self-centered approach to it. A saying that can be used, and I've heard it often in 12-step fellowships, is, God, I am this way, and only with your help can I change. And this comes around or comes about addictions a different way and these shortcomings a different way. It's not saying, I want to be rid of this defect of fear. I have this fear. It doesn't feel comfortable. It's not of use. I'm handing it over to you. Show me what to do. So with this step, and again, this is a lifelong practice. We can't just say, remove all my defects and let me be happy and peaceful. It is asking, when these defects arise, higher power, please show me what action to take. Please remove and help me be of use. The next step, step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends for them all. This reminds me of the first yama, ahimsa, listing the violence or harm and become willing to make amends for it. Often by looking back at the list of those on the inventory, one can see where the harm may have been caused. One can think that their substance abuse or behavior didn't harm anyone else but themselves. But in this step, it's evident that the effects on oneself also affects the whole. What exactly is harm? It might be physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage. It might be if one has a bad temper, or one cheats or lies, is jealous, miserable, irresponsible, cold, impatient. All of these defects can harm other people. So with this step, it's literally listing it out. Now, it is very clear that when you're doing a step, not to be concerned about the next steps ahead. It was shared with me. Someone said that they were so concerned with what was ahead of them that they couldn't complete. They procrastinated on a step and they ended up going out and leaving the program and getting drunk as alcohol was their addiction. So it is very important that when one is working the 12 steps, they work them step by step. So with this step, simply listing all the persons they've harmed and then becoming willing to make amends to them. The next step is making amends itself. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So after making the list in step 8, it's now a matter of carefully reflecting and making direct amends to the people on that list. So this step is known as one of the most freeing steps, to be able to gather their courage and then go out and, regardless of the consequences, take full responsibility for one's past actions. It can be and open the door to full liberation. It's important to note that in this step, if it's going to harm or injure others, that one would not make the amends and they would do what's known as a living amends, which means that in the future they wouldn't act out in that behavior. The next step, step 10, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. By continuing to look at the assets and liabilities on a daily basis, one continues to grow. Peace develops. It's a spiritual axon that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. Being aware of our emotions, and in yoga, we learn that emotion is just energy in motion, emotion. When we suppress it, it festers, it becomes bigger, it persists. When we allow it to move, to shift, the energy in motion passes. So this is where we really can live yoga. If we're tensed in our life, breathing, if we're tired, perhaps doing a yoga nidra, if we're emotional, practicing kirtan, spotting and admitting and correcting flaws is the essence of character building and good living. By taking this personal inventory, looking at where these defects are, and then admitting when we're wrong, gives again that freedom. It gives a sense of ease. And when one is in ease, they're likely to act out, unlikely to act out in that dis-ease. Dis-ease of the body and mind, and then therefore not pick up their drug of choice or their dysfunctional behavior. The next step, step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. The objective here is to improve the conscious contact with the higher power. Why? Because it works. When we are in tune, when we are living with ease, there's a flow with life, a trust, an acceptance, a serenity arises. As yoga teachers, we know the power of meditation, the peace of mind that brings emotional balance. There's a saying here that I hear often in 12-step fellowships, and that is, "Thy will, not mine, be done." It's this union or developing this connection with the higher power and trusting that the higher power will take care. Whatever's happening is meant to happen. Asking for the knowledge of this higher power's will and then the power to carry that out, that then is empowering in itself. If one is doing their higher power's will, one is generally living a meaningful life, a life worth living. Commonly, people who enter 12-step fellowships enter living a life that's not worth living. They're so unhappy, so disconnected from life itself. This step is really empowering, giving someone the tools to live a life worth living through their connection to their higher power. The final step, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics or other addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Now, this step reminds me of karma yoga, seva, selfless service, by helping others recover and not expecting anything in return. Funnily enough, there's that paradox. By helping others, one is already receiving so much, being of use, being of service to other people. Carrying this message to other people can be in the form of simply conversation. It could be by being abstinent or sober, whatever it is, being an example. This step encourages that the addict practice all the principles of the 12 steps in all their affairs. Through the practice of ahimsa, non-harming, addicts begin to practice compassion and love for themselves and those around them. In observing truthfulness or satya, they work to maintain honesty in all actions and relationships. Aparigraha, non-grasping, teaches one to relinquish that which feeds their addiction. And socha, or purity, encourages cleansing of the body and mind. The path of recovery is also marked by the niyama of tapas, the fueling of the inner fire of purification and austerity. In addition to these, the limbs of asana and pranayama work to purify and detox the body and mind, encouraging deep relaxation and awareness and bring the practitioner back to balance, sattva. I hope this has been insightful into what 12-step programs are and how yogic practices and philosophies can complement them. Hari Om Tat Sat.